What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, how's your bracket doing? Mine is not too bad. One of my Final Four teams did get knocked out last night with Arizona losing to Duke. But I mean, I knew that one was a long shot. That was kind of my upset special pick because I don't really like to pick all number one teams to hit the Final Four. I always like to throw some rando team in there. And so that's kind of what I did with Arizona. So I'm not shocked that they lost to Duke. I mean, the score was 193, but to keep it real, Arizona really wasn't in it, especially in that second half. But for the most part, man, Duke did what they do. And so they've moved on. And then Alabama beat the crap out of BYU. And so in the Elite Eight, Duke and Alabama will be facing off against each other. But one of my other Final Four teams did end up moving on yesterday with Florida stomping Maryland and Texas Tech just getting by Arkansas. So they have both moved on to the Elite Eight. And then, of course, we have some more games in the Sweet 16 tonight. And then, of course, the Elite Eight begins tomorrow and goes through the weekend. But so far, I mean, like I said, only one of my Final Four teams has been knocked out. My championship is still intact as well. My Final Four were Auburn versus Florida. So Florida's still in there. We'll see what happens with Auburn. And then Houston versus Arizona. Of course, I said Arizona got knocked out, but Houston, we'll see what happens with them. And my championship, I have Auburn versus Houston with Houston winning it all. So it's still kind of intact. I'm not really shocked that I'm actually shocked that only one of my Final Four teams is knocked out because, you know, there's been some times where, you know, they get knocked out right off the bat. But not too bad with the bracket so far. But not too good either. But, you know, when you get your Final Four mostly intact, I think that's pretty good. All right, so let's move on to the NBA. We are getting closer and closer to the NBA playoffs. So the regular season is starting to take shape with down the stretch here with the seeding. I mean, we know the Western Conference is really going to be convoluted these next couple of weeks because every win and every loss is going to matter for the seeding. And like I keep saying, you do not want to face this Golden State Warriors team. They've kind of cooled off just a bit. But I mean, for the most part, this Western Conference is going to be a problem compared to the Eastern Conference. I don't think the Eastern Conference is really anybody past the Cavaliers and the Celtics. I think it's those two teams and everybody else. When it comes to the Western Conference, yes, I believe in the Thunder. They definitely are they hit the 60-win mark this week, as a matter of fact. So they are the first team to do that as well. So they're playing great. But, I mean, like I said, seeds 2 through 6 or 7, it's pretty close. And like I said, each game is going to be a big deal heading down the stretch here. So let's get into what happened this week. And we had a couple of unfortunate things happen news-wise in the NBA. So I'll get to those when we get to them. But beginning with Monday, the Phoenix Suns finally won a close game. And they are a team who needs to keep getting these close wins down the stretch because they are just that team that's either barely hanging on to the play-in or just out of the play-in. So every win matters to them. And they were able to get a close win over the Milwaukee Bucks, 108-106. Devin Booker had the game winner with 1.7 seconds left on the clock. He ended up with a double-double with 19 points and 12 assists. And Durant also added in an additional 38 points himself. I mean, the Phoenix Suns, like I said, they need all the wins they could get, especially in those type of situations, because they've been failing for the most part every time they hit the, you know, these close margins. It's just, it kind of feels like they're on the losing end of all of them. Then on Tuesday, as I said, Oklahoma City Thunder became the first team to hit the 60-win mark, and that is when they did it on Tuesday against the Sacramento Kings, 121-105. SGA dropped 32 points, just continuing his resume builder to show everybody he is the absolute MVP, especially now that his team actually has 61 wins on the season, but they hit 60 on Tuesday night. Then with some of the unfortunate news in the NBA, it was also announced on Tuesday that Damian Lillard is going to be out indefinitely right now with a blood clot in his leg. It doesn't look as bad as Wemby's. You know, Wemby missed the rest of the season, whereas Dame, they said indefinitely. So who knows what that means? I think it's more of a just we'll play it by ear. But, I mean, that's definitely not good news for the Milwaukee Bucks because they are in the thick of things in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, and they cannot afford to lose Dame. But it looks like they have lost him for the foreseeable future, at least for now. Then on Wednesday, Nikola Jokic made his return from his he had been out, I think, 5 games with an injury, and he came back with a vengeance, of course. This should come as no shock to you. He comes back with from an injury and comes back with a triple-double his first game back against the Milwaukee Bucks. So they've just had a terrible week. But Denver got the win 127-117. Jokic ended up with 39 points, 10 assists, and 10 rebounds, an absolute domination, and just exactly what Denver needs to get back on track for their playoff run. Then the Lakers played a crazy game against the Indiana Pacers. They got a just a slight win, 120-119. LeBron had the game winner. As a matter of fact, Luka went up in the middle to try and hit the game winner, but it just kind of went up, rimmed out, and LeBron was right there boxing out and was able to just get the tip in right before the buzzer sounded. Crazy, but I mean, I've been noticing a trend with the Lakers, and that is they start out the first half really solid, but then that second half, they start to fall apart. And honestly, they were actually really shocked. It was shocking that they walked away with that win because it was really close there towards the end, just like they lost to the Bulls again last night in a game winner half-court shot. But in this one against the Pacers, LeBron ended up with 13 points and 13 rebounds. Luka had 34 points. Reeves had 24 points. One thing that's been bothering me lately with Reeves is he's been just reverting back to just tossing up the three-pointer rather than setting up plays. And he really has to stop that because that's actually been kind of costing us some of these second-half leads that we've built in the first half. Then on Thursday, a historic game actually happened. And depending on what side you're on, you were not on the right side of history. And that would be the Washington Wizards got smashed by the Indiana Pacers 162-109. Yes, that's right. The Indiana Pacers scored 162 points, which is actually a team record for them in points. And this game was so out of hand that they had over 80 points in the first half. And by that, that's not combined with both teams. I'm talking about the Indiana Pacers themselves had 80 points. I believe they had 83 points, it was, heading into halftime. So that's how that game went. And, I mean, the Wizards have been the worst team this season. And that just goes to show how terrible they are. They just got obliterated. I mean, it was so bad that the Pacers actually, instead of taking shots with, I think, like a minute left to go in the fourth quarter, they just started letting the game clock run out and taking game clock violations because it was that bad of a game for the Wizards. Like, they even were like, oh my God, if we keep scoring points, like, it's just going to be really embarrassing for this team, and it already is. So there was that. But in a very, very odd and shocking news, the Memphis Grizzlies just fired their coach, Taylor Jenkins, like just fired him right before I started recording the show. And the Memphis Grizzlies have been in the thick of things all season long. They've actually been one of the most consistent teams all season long. Their problem lately, I mean, honestly, their problem all season long when they have their slumps is just injuries. And I mean, you really can't do anything about that. That's just the name of the game, you know, but yeah, the Grizzlies fired their coach, so that should be an interesting thing that happened, I mean, with the playoffs literally right around the corner. But speaking of playoffs, let's go ahead and give a rundown of how the playoff picture is looking right now. So turning to the Western Conference, the extremely competitive conference, I mean, the obvious number one overall seed by a mile is the Oklahoma City Thunder. They will not be losing that number one seed status, by the way, with their 61-12 record, because the Rockets are the number two seed right now, and their record is 48-26. So yeah, there is no way in hell any of these other teams are going to catch up to the Thunder. So the Thunder are solid in not only their Western Conference domination, but they keep it up at this pace. Cavaliers have kind of been on a tiny bit of a losing streak here, but it looks like the Thunder are probably going to end up with overall home court advantage if they end up getting all the way to the NBA Finals. But they have their grip on the Western Conference. And so, like I said, the number two seed is the Houston Rockets right now, The number 3 seed is the Denver Nuggets. Number 4 seed, the Los Angeles Lakers. Number 5 seed, the Memphis Grizzlies. And the number 6 seed, the Los Angeles Clippers. With the play-in side of things, the number 7 seed right now is the Golden State Warriors. The number 8 seed is the Minnesota Timberwolves. Number 9 seed is the Sacramento Kings. And the number 10 seed right now is the Dallas Mavericks, who did get Anthony Davis back this past weekend. He's looked pretty solid. Don't know if that matters right now at this point. They are just in the play-in, but it's nice to see him not only back out on the court, but actually playing well also. Then in the Eastern Conference side of things, the number 1 overall seed remains the Cleveland Cavaliers. Number 2 is the Boston Celtics. Number 3, the New York Knicks. Number 4, the Indiana Pacers. Number 5, the Detroit Pistons. And number 6, the Milwaukee Bucks. On the play-in side of things, the number 7 seed is the Atlanta Hawks. Number 8, the Orlando Magic. Number 9, the Chicago Bulls. And number 10, the Miami Heat. So, like I said, only a couple more weeks until the play-in begins. The down to the nitty-gritty for some of these teams, which is why it's just so odd that Memphis literally fired their coach today. And, it kind of feels like they've liked him the last couple of seasons, but obviously they did not. If they shit-canned him right before the playoffs with 2 weeks left to go in the regular season, just very, very odd move from a team. And I don't think that's going to help you potentially win a championship here, but who knows? We'll see. We did have a couple of free agency signings in the NFL. Not a lot of earth-shattering stuff, but Russell Wilson, he's been kind of just getting thrown around from team to team over the last couple of years, and now he has made his way to the New York Giants this year. As a Cowboys fan, I am thrilled with this because, you know, Russell Wilson absolutely on the downside of his career, and just he's not what he used to be. So this should be a very long season for Russell Wilson because they have a terrible offensive line. I mean, obviously they can make some moves, but I don't think this is going to be a good move for either of them. But hey, have fun with that one. And then Stephon Diggs, a wide receiver, he ended up signing with the New England Patriots. Now, I think that's a good move for the Patriots. I don't know if that's a good move for him, but, he's getting paid, so that's good for him. But those were the two probably biggest moves in NFL free agency that happened over the week. All right, so moving on to my list this week. I've, like I said, on Monday's show, talking about George Foreman, my favorite boxer of all time, decided I was going to go ahead and do the top 5 George Foreman fights of all time. Definitely difficult to whittle it down to only 5. The dude was, and watching the highlights just of some of these fights was just awesome to see, just because, you know, what I loved about George Foreman is that he was not a passive fighter at all, at least in his beginning stages, like in the beginning of his career when he dominated in the 70s, that dude would just, as soon as the bell rang, he would be walking right up to your ass and punching the shit out of you. Just watching him with one hand sometimes just punch you like 10 times in a row and you're like, what the fuck is going on? It was just fun to rewatch some of his old highlights because the dude was just insane. But then, when he came back and actually won in his 40s, like, it's just crazy to watch how different he was. I mean, he's still ready to walk up and knock your ass out, but it was crazy to see how it went from him not being able to last longer than, like, 5 rounds to all of a sudden he's going 12 rounds, which is just crazy. But so let's just do a rundown of the top 5 greatest George Foreman fights of all time. Well, and also, you know, since we're talking about him, you know, his career record, this is why he's one of the greatest to ever do it. 76 wins and 5 losses, and 68 of those were knockouts. That's just why he was fucking awesome. Also won gold medal in 1968. That's basically where his boxing career started, and just took off from there. He was just, once he won gold, it was like on from there, and he was coming up in the ranks, and boom, once he hit the rumble in the jungle, it was like pinnacle of his career. Then it kind of took a dive, and then he came back, and then it just went up from there, and then he retired, and then just went on and did his own thing. But it's just cool to kind of see how his career just went up and down. He was dominant, but still, he could knock a motherfucker out. I bet you he could have knocked a motherfucker out the day before he died. Just that's what kind of a boxer he was. So let's start off with number 5 on my top 5 George Foreman fights. versus Michael Moorer, November 5th in 1994. This was when he came back in his 40s. He actually became the oldest heavyweight champion of all time. That's why this had to make the list. He was 45 years old when he fought and when he won. Michael Moorer was not a weak opponent either. He was undefeated at the time. He was the heavyweight champ, so this was for the belt. And like I said, at the beginning of George Foreman's career, he was known for just knocking a motherfucker out pretty quick, within a couple of rounds. If you got him going too far in a round, that's one of the reasons why he lost the Rumble in the Jungle, is because, you know, he just got wore down. And it's because he went so fucking hard at the beginning of every fight. So this was completely different. He actually was pretty much getting taken to the mat by Moore for most of the fight, but then he just got this second win, and in the 10th round, he knocked his ass out. And like I said, became the oldest heavyweight champion of all time. It was it's a crazy story too, because I mean, like, he wasn't in the same type of shape he was, but like I said, he had hands of steel. He would just knock a motherfucker out, and that is exactly what he still did at the age of 45. Then at number 4 on my top 5, George Foreman fights versus Ron Lyle, January 24th of 1976. This was actually after he had lost the Rumble in the Jungle to Muhammad Ali. And so this was probably one of the best fights he had after that, because he kind of slumped after that. The Rumble in the Jungle took a lot of his confidence. That's why he ended up retiring, just because it kind of just took the wind out of his sails, probably just made him rethink things in life. But this fight against Lyle is one of the craziest fist fights you will ever see. I mean, both of these guys, they are delivering blows, taking blows, and it is just crazy to see both of them. Both of these guys are just annihilating the shit out of each other, and you cannot believe it. Like, there's one round where you're like, holy shit, George Foreman's losing. Holy shit, Lyle's losing. One guy's falling down, then the other guy's falling down, and then the other one's in the corner, barely standing up. Like, it is just a crazy back and forth. You want to see some just amazing, boom, pound for pound, beating the crap out of each other. Watch this one between George Foreman and Ron Lyle. They just obliterate the crap out of each other until finally in the 5th round. I mean, it kind of looks like Foreman is just losing it. It looks like he is about to just... Neither one of these guys is able to stand really at this point. They are so beaten up. They are so exhausted at this point. And finally, Foreman just gets this last wind, gets him in the corner, and just starts pummeling the crap out of him until Lyle finally falls down and he gets the 5th round knockout. But, I mean, I kid you not, you want to go watch just a straight-up slugfest. George Foreman versus Ron Lyle, straight-up slugfest. Then number 3 on my top 5 George Foreman fights. I had to put this on here because it is my favorite fight of all time. I've mentioned it on many occasions. Even though he lost this one, it doesn't matter. It is the greatest boxing fight you will ever, ever see. And that is the Rumble in the Jungle versus Muhammad Ali, October 30th of 1974. The famous rope-a-dope by Muhammad Ali. And when you watch it, you see he knew exactly what he had to do, because this was pretty much the downside of Ali's career. He still was great. I mean, obviously, he won this one, but he wasn't the same as he used to be. Whereas Foreman's coming in hot. He was the heavy favorite in this one, and he was the dude at the time. He was the dude, and he was beating the crap out of everybody. He was pummeling everybody. As a matter of fact, the two fights before this one are the top two, just so y'all know. So if you are a boxing fan, you already know what my top two are. They are the greatest George Foreman fights ever. But this one, the thing is, you could tell Ali must have had some type of thinking where he's like, this dude wears out real quick, because Foreman's trying to just go for the straight up knockout. And when you do that, that's going to cost you if you end up going in deeper rounds, because you just start wearing yourself out. And that is exactly what the rope-a-dope was. Basically, what was going on is every time Foreman would get some nice body shots in on Ali, he's doing the rope-a-dope. He's taking all it's just the way it was working. It just was taking all the wind out of Foreman's sails. He's getting exhausted. He's wearing down each and every round, and you could see it. And I mean, at first you're looking, I remember watching this. I'm like, how does Foreman lose this one? Because Foreman comes right out the gate like he always does. He's getting some good licks in, but then you could just see the rope-a-dope starts playing a role as they keep going on. And, you know, Ali's just getting some really nice shots in, and he's really starting to fuck with Foreman. They get to the eighth round, and it is on. And Muhammad Ali just gets this second wind. He could tell. Foreman is gassed, and he just pummels the crap out of Foreman and knocks his ass out in the eighth round. Like I said, it's a loss for Foreman, but still, it's the greatest fight, and I had to put it in there because it's just the greatest fight ever, so it had to go in there. Then at number two on my top five George Foreman fights versus Ken Norton. Now, I am a Dallas Cowboys fan. We had Ken Norton's son, Ken Norton Jr., play linebacker for quite some time, especially in the glory years of the 90s when we won Super Bowl. So I already have a soft spot for Ken Norton Jr. And I always knew his dad was a boxer, a hell of a boxer, by the way, too. Probably one of the most underrated boxers. I mean, if you're a boxer fan, we all know Ken Norton, great boxer. But if you're just a casual fan, you probably don't even know his name, but he was a fantastic fighter, and he had a very weird style of fighting, but man, he was a excellent fighter. And so George Foreman's coming in the into this one defending his heavyweight title on March 26th of 1974, and you know, like I said, Norton, good ass fighter. Well, Foreman, no, not against George Foreman in this one. George Foreman pummeled the crap out of him and ended up getting the second round TKO in this one. And it was just straight up domination by Foreman. And it's just the epitome of what was so great about him. Because like I said, he would come right out the gate and just go right at you. He was not passive at all in his fighting skills. It was, because you know, sometimes you'll be watching a fight and you'll just, and it's like the other one's just waiting for the other one to make a move so the other one could counter with something else. But no, not Foreman. He's walking right up, that bell dings, and he is ready to beat your ass. And it doesn't matter who you are, that's just how he always was. Boom, boom, boom. And that's how this one was. As soon as the bell rang, Ken Norton had no shot. He had no shot at all. He was delivering some really solid blows, but for the most part, Foreman dominated this one, and he ended up with the second round knockout and getting the win in that one. And that was basically right before the Rumble in the Jungle. But number one on the top five George Foreman fights of all time, it's actually, you know, it's also another, like, historical fight in boxing, and especially for the career of George Foreman, because this is really where he put himself on the map and let everybody know, I am George Foreman. And that is versus Joe Frazier, of course. On January 22nd of 1973, Joe Frazier was undefeated. He was one of the top boxers at this time, and Foreman's coming in as the new guy. Now, Foreman's also undefeated at this point, and, you know, he's been on the come up. Like I said, he's got his gold medal. He's knocking every motherfucker out himself. So this is Frazier's moment to just defend his title. Nah, this was George Foreman's moment, and he beat the crap out of Frazier. It wasn't even a close one. This one was all Foreman, all night, and it was, like I said, the defining moment of his career. He became the heavyweight champ, and not only is it a defining moment for his career, but it's also one of those huge sports moments that you've probably heard where the announcers, down goes Frazier, down goes Frazier. I mean, that's just a historic moment in boxing. Everybody remembers it. If you watched it, if you know anything about boxing, down goes Frazier is, that's just, you just know what it is. You know it's George Foreman knocking the greatest boxer out at the time out and becoming the heavyweight champion in the second round, by the way. So like I said, Foreman would come right out there and boom, knock your ass out. But if you took him to the eighth round like Ali did, that might be a good thing. And but as he got older, it actually was the opposite. Like I said, he knocked Michael Moorer out in the 10th round. There was actually a couple other fights he made it the whole 12 rounds, and he wasn't known for that when he first started out. So it's really cool to see that he actually just like reflected on his boxing career and was like, you know what, this is what I could do to improve, and he did it. And just an excellent career from George Foreman, and the boxing world is missing a legend, but he gave us some great memories. And like I said, if you have never seen any George Foreman fights, not only watch the Rumble in the Jungle, because that's just the greatest fight ever, but if you just want a quick one, because the Ron Lyle one, I think, was like a 25-minute long fight, go watch that one, because that was just boom, pound for pound, ass beating. And it's crazy to see these two guys could barely stand, but yet they were still delivering blows like no other. And that's what is so great about boxing. All right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.